Dave Woods. This is the radio show where country music gets up close and personal. Spend some time in the country and get to know our guests. Spend some time in the country where the music's the best. The latest news and memories, two great stories that get told.
Toronto, Ontario singer-songwriter Kirsten Jones blends alternative country, Americana, and contemporary folk and comes up with a warm, welcoming sound. Her current album, The Mad Mile, is getting airplay in Canada and climbing up the Americana music charts in the U.S. This year, she was nominated for the CCMA Roots Artist of the Year. A song from the album, I Don't Want to Live Like This, won third place in the international songwriting competition, quite a feat, winning that third place out of 15,000 entries. It's my pleasure now to welcome Kirsten Jones. Hey, Kirsten.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
I am doing just terrific. Great to have you back on the show. We had a great talk. I think it was around a year ago. I've lost track of time now.
Yeah, it's been a while. One of my favorite interviews, Dave. I love talking to you.
I really appreciate that. It's great to talk with you as well. Well, I'm really excited about the songs we're going to be sharing on here from the CD, The Mad Mile. But a lot's been happening since that time, and the summer's been especially busy. Let's talk first of all about finding out that you were nominated for CCMA Roots Artist of the Year. What was that like?
That was a huge dream come true for me, actually, because there really isn't another national award for the kind of music that I do. There's a lot of country and there's a lot of folk, but roots is really where I fall. So it was a huge honor. And to be in the company of people like Corb Lund and Jimmy Rankin, that was another huge honor.
Yeah, pretty great company that you were part of. And I'm sure that was great recognition, and it probably opened up some more doors, and it definitely got recognition out about who Kirsten Jones is.
I hope so. I mean, one thing that's really interesting about Roots is that I was only the second female nominee ever, the other being Kathleen Edwards, in all the years of the Roots category. So I feel like there's some headway to be made there. There's so many great Roots artists out there. And so, yeah, I'm just happy to be part of the group.
And one of the songs from the album, I Don't Want to Live Like This, winning that third place honor in the International Songwriting Competition. Now, as I mentioned, there's like 15,000 entries from, I think it's 1,500 places around the globe. I mean, there's just so many entries. And you came in third with this. It's a song you wrote with the producer on the album, Jay Lewis. What was that like to receive the news you had gotten that high in the category?
Well, it was especially important to me because it was the third year in a row in the finals for me. And the first time I'd ever placed in the top three there in Americana. And number one was an artist named Casey Chambers, and number two was an artist named Carrie Rodriguez, both of whom are two of my favorites in the genre. So, again, I was just thrilled to be in the same company. And writing with Gary was a total joy. I loved writing with him, so it was even better that it was the song that he and I wrote together.
And I should obviously correct myself, Gary Lewis, of course, from the Jayhawks, so there's where I got the J in there and kind of mixed it up.
That's right, yeah. You should just shorten his name, Jay Lewis.
Yeah, exactly. We'll call him Jay. We're all good friends.
Yeah, exactly.
He's the front man for the Jayhawks. And it was very interesting how you got Gary or asked him or came about having him produce the CD. Can you share that story with us? Because it shows it never hurts to ask.
Yeah, it's one of those things I had in my head that I wanted to do, but I was kind of scared of my own vision, thinking, oh, yeah, right, you know, I'm going to work with one of my idols. But I did finally just look up his management online and send him my demo. When I felt I was at a point where I was doing the best I could do, I sent it to him, and I was actually on tour out in Alberta, and he was here in Toronto playing. And I remember lamenting the fact that I didn't get to go see Gary. And it was that very weekend that I got an email from his manager saying, Gary would like to talk to you about this album. So it was a big thrill for me. And it does go to show that you should just reach out to the people that you really, really want to work with. What can it hurt?
Yeah, exactly. The worst that can happen is no, but the best case scenario obviously is what happened in this case. And he got to work with you, and then you guys got to write songs for this album. Did you learn anything writing with him, pick up any tips or just any great way that he goes about songwriting?
Yeah, he taught me two really important things. One is don't give up. We were writing actually one of the songs I sang today, Losing Something, and as we started, I felt like, oh, this isn't going anywhere, and he persevered, and I'm thrilled with that song. I'm so glad that we wrote it, and I'm trying to remember what the other thing was that he taught me. Oh, well, he has this really cool way of writing lyrics where sometimes he's just strumming and he just lets a stream of consciousness come out of his mouth while he's strumming away. And I had never tried that before. And he kind of walked me through that and just said, say whatever comes out. And that was interesting because it brings out things maybe that you wouldn't have thought of otherwise.
Well, that is a cool process. And I guess what it does is it's trying to eliminate overthinking, right, and overanalyzing.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just letting whatever come out, and you might just stumble upon something pretty great.
Exactly, and I am definitely known for my overanalyzing, so that was a good help to me.
Yeah, because songwriting appeals to, or, well, songwriting, the craft of it, but as far as appealing to a listener, it's not always what's been analyzed and what's been, you know, intellectualized. There's something cathartic about a song or just something that might hit us that, you know, it comes from a stream of consciousness.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, after saying that and sounding so smart here, let's turn to another question here.
okay.
Your hero. So Gary was a hero of yours, and you got to work with him. Are there any other musical heroes out there that you've run into and maybe have an awkward moment in knowing how to express what their music's meant to them or gotten a little nervous?
Oh, that's so funny. Of course. Yeah, you always wish you could think of that brilliant thing to say to your heroes that will make them go, oh, I connect with you too. But of course, that's impossible.
Right.
But I actually was just down in Nashville for the Americana Music Conference, and I got to give an artist named Kelly Willis my CD, and she's a big reason why I do what I do. And the great thing was that she has also worked with Gary Louris, another reason why I wanted to work with Gary in the first place. And so when I introduced myself, I didn't have to do it as such a super fan. I could do it as a little bit of a, hey, we share this common experience, and I'm a super fan.
Right.
So hopefully I didn't make too much of a fool out of myself. I don't think I did. She was very nice, and her husband, Bruce Robeson, and there's two people I'd really like to work with as well.
Now, Bruce, as I understand it, he is quite a songwriter. I believe there's a song that Tim McGraw recorded of his, Angry All the Time.
That doesn't surprise me. I think a lot of people have recorded Bruce's songs, and actually that was the highlight of the music conference for me, was seeing the two of them on stage together, and they've written a bunch of songs together that if they put out an album, it will be exactly what I love. So I hope they do.
That's terrific. Now, you mentioned the Americana Music Conference, and I understand there were awards as well for that down in Nashville somewhat recently. Talk about Americana and what that brand of music is, maybe some of the artists, or just what that all encompasses for those who might not be too much up on it.
Oh, sure. I mean, Americana is exactly what I love as far as music, but it has an unfortunate name because people think automatically it's American music, but it's a very prevalent genre in Canada and Australia and lots of other places in the world. It's just called country everywhere else. But Americana would be a cross between country and folk, those people that fall in the middle, like myself, maybe not totally country or totally folk. And when I was at the Americana Awards, for instance, in the first 5 minutes, out comes Emmylou Harris and Alison Krauss and Buddy Miller, and then Lucinda Williams gets her Lifetime Achievement Award. So I'm like, I'm in heaven. This place is exactly where I want to be.
Nice.
That would be an example of some really big Americana artists.
And that music is, as you said, it's quite popular. I mean, there's country and there's folk, and that, of course, is what it blends. But those artists you mentioned are very well known, so it's certainly a thriving form of music.
You know, it really is. And another Lifetime Achievement Award was given to Greg Allman. And another award was won by Robert Plant with his new band, Band of Joy, which includes Buddy Miller and Patty Griffin. So even some people are coming into it again that are bringing a lot more notice to it. I feel like Americana is the future. I wish, again, I could change the name to something that is more worldwide. But it's just authentic songwriting and authentic instruments, and I think people are kind of craving that authenticity these days.
Definitely, yeah. Music can get overproduced and oversung, and it's just nice to hear something a little more, as you said, authentic and soft-spoken even. There's a cover song you do. It's one of my favorite songs from the past, Danny's song. Anne Murray, of course, had a big hit with it, and Kenny Loggins wrote it.
Yeah.
How do you feel singing a song like that? It's such a lovely song.
Oh, I just love that song. And the wonderful thing is you'd be surprised how many people know that song. It always turns into a big sing-along at shows, so I love that part too.
Yeah.
And also I have a little boy, and it's kind of about having a little boy. So
That's right.
A great time to sing, yeah.
Yeah, Kenny Loggins wrote it. I think it was a gift to his brother or something at the time who had a son, something like that. But I was actually reading Anne Murray's book recently, and she talked about how much she loved that song.
Oh, yeah. That's a classic as far as I'm concerned.
It's a beautiful one. Now, another song on the album, The Mad Mile, You Ain't Coming By. And this one also has done well in some songwriting competitions. You've entered it in, made it to the finals. But you wrote it about a day in your life when you were 6 years old, not at that time, but reflecting back on that day.
Exactly, yeah. Certainly, I mean, it's about my dad. And I didn't meet my dad till I was 15, but it's definitely putting myself back in the moment when I was six, and certainly don't feel the same way now. My dad and I have a great relationship, but it was a long time before I met him. So I get the most stories from that song and another song called I Will Love You Now. That's probably one of my favorite parts about performing, is just having people come up and share their experiences with me. And a lot of people do that with You Ain't Coming By.
Yeah, it must be something when other listeners, this is something that you've lived, and now other people are hearing it and connecting with it. It's something that applies to their life, and they're telling you this. Like, it's almost you're giving them a form of therapy.
Yeah, and myself as well.
Yeah, exactly, but, both of you.
Well, yeah, even with the kind of music I listen to, I would say the same. The people that have influenced me have often been really personal songwriters who tell stories that I can identify with. So if I can do that, then that's the ultimate goal to me.
And in some cases, not only maybe a form of therapy and comfort at that particular time they're listening, but a song could have a message in it about reconnecting with that father or mother or brother or whoever it is. And maybe because of that song, somebody is going to go and do that.
Yeah, you know, I've certainly had a lot of people tell me things like that. In fact, actually just last week at the Americana conference, a gentleman told me that song made him want to be a better father to his daughter. And I couldn't believe
wow.
it. I couldn't believe he even knew my song, let alone that it had that effect. So again, like probably the most rewarding moments in my life would be something like that.
That definitely is very amazing. That's amazing. Let's turn, Kirsten, to the song, which is the title track to your current album, The Mad Mile. And give us a bit of a story behind the song. It's quite interesting.
Well, thanks. It's very apropos to what I'm going through now, which is basically when you're pursuing your dreams, sometimes you have to give up other things. So, in other words, I don't really want to tour that much right now because I don't want to be gone from my family. So it's what you give up to follow your dreams and then how to balance all of that.
Now, is that the song Losing Something or is that The Mad Mile?
Oh, sorry, that's Losing Something. Were you going to play The Mad Mile?
Yeah, I was going to play
the
Mad Mile
story?
First, yeah.
Okay, well, let me tell that story.
Yeah, but sure.
Okay. Well, The Mad Mile, I actually talked about it on a previous show, but it was about a little sea kayaking adventure I had in New Zealand with my best friend, and we had no idea what we were doing and got stuck out on the water for about 3 hours and finally got back to shore, and they told us that stretch of water was called the Mad Mile. So
wow.
It's kind of a euphemism for life, but it has a very literal story behind it, which is that one.
That is awesome. Well, let's share the song now, but definitely the lyrics will tell the story as well. This is Kirsten Jones and The Mad Mile here on In the Country. Toronto singer-songwriter Kirsten Jones and the Mad Mile title track to her current album. You can learn more about her at kirstenjones.com. And it's a great website, Kirsten. It's really well designed, and it's quite interesting. A lot of information on it, too.
Oh, good. Thank you. Yeah, I worked really hard on that with the International Web Development, that company, this year. So I'm pretty happy with it, too.
Yeah, it really jumps out at you, and I think it's so important. I mean, if you go to a website, it's kind of either plain or not, you know, doesn't have a lot of color to it, but yours definitely does, so it adds to the experience of visiting it.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, good stuff. Now, we mentioned the CCMA Award. The album is also tied to a Juno nomination, and I can't recall now if it won or not, but a nomination for Engineer of the Year.
That's right. That's Dennis Tugas. He's a super awesome engineer. He's kind of one of those guys, when I look back at the project, I think I will definitely work with him again. He is definitely part of the team, and he's just really good at getting the sounds and just making it sound so good. So I was really thrilled when he got nominated for my album. That meant a lot to me.
Great stuff. And another part of the album, of course, everybody will know the name Jim Cuddy with the band Blue Rodeo, and hugely successful as a solo artist as well. And what a voice. I love Jim's voice. What was it like recording with him and sharing a song together on your album?
Well, it was another dream come true, really. He's just a total pro. He's amazing. He just gets up to the mic and does his thing, and it's exactly what you would think. He's really funny, really nice guy, very generous with his talents, and I'm just glad to have had that experience.
Yeah, he's got one of those voices. I mean, you, right away you know who it is singing, and he can do, I mean, the up-tempo, obviously, but when he does a ballad, like, of course, the classic Try, going back 20 years now, when Blue Rodeo first came out, I mean, his voice can really deliver those love songs and the sad songs.
Oh, yeah. He's got that full range of emotion. I think that's part of why he's connected with so many fans over the years.
And you've got, going back in time before you began into this music, although music was a big part of your life since a very, very young age, you had a career sales executive at Universal, and you actually gave that up to go full-time right into music. Nerve-wracking at the time, I'm sure.
Yeah, but one of those things I felt totally driven to do, or I couldn't have done it. I don't even know where that drive comes from, but all of a sudden, it was actually after the New Zealand trip. It's like, okay, I'm quitting my job and I'm going to be a singer. I had always wanted to do that. I had gone through quite a change in my life just previous to that. My mom had been very sick, and I had just gotten a divorce as well. So it was a really tumultuous time.
Yeah.
And you know how that just makes you just suddenly appreciate different things. So I knew from a very, very young age that I wanted to be a singer, and finally just thought, I've got to do this. And so that's what I did.
So much of being a performer and a decision like that especially is the quality or the word fearless.
My favorite saying is, leap and the net will appear. I love that saying. Some days
and
I feel like that,
and
other days I don't.
That's a belief you've got to have, right? Regardless of the outcome, you've got to believe that one way or another. Well, first of all, you've got to take that leap because this is what you love, and something's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not to say that it's always going to work out perfectly, but you're sort of working towards a direction, and not only working towards it, but it is that journey when you're involved in music that's what it's all about, that journey, not knowing the outcome, but enjoying each step along the way.
Yeah, and I would say that being down in Nashville, it's like a community that really supports that. And coming back to Toronto, you have to really search for that community. It's not an automatically supportive community of music and songwriting. You know, people have very different lives. But in Nashville, it's the norm. I feel normal when I'm down there.
Tell us about that Nashville trip. You just got back very recently. What were some of the highlights and just all the great things that happened there?
Well, it was great. I got to reconnect with the Jayhawks. They were there. They're number one on the Americana charts right now, so that's really exciting for them. They haven't had an album out in quite a few years. And I got to meet Greg Lease, who played on my album. He's a genius pedal steel player, but he did his parts from L.A. So I never met him until this conference, and that was an amazing moment. And he really liked, you know, my music, which is a huge, awesome compliment as far as I'm concerned. He plays with all kinds of people. I mean, he's kind of a superstar of Americana. He got a Lifetime Achievement last year at the Americana Conference. So he's been around. He's been on everybody's albums from Sheryl Crow to Emmylou Harris and a million others. So it was real thrill just to finally meet him.
When you've got someone like that who's that talented and talented at the pedal steel, they're going to bring something to the song, aren't they? In this case, I Don't Want to Live Like This, something that not just any other musician is going to do.
I believe strongly he brought a few of my songs up to another level. I just thought he was amazing, and I told him that. You know, it is sometimes about getting the right players. There are so many talented players, but it would be a different album without Greg Lease, so I feel really fortunate that he was there.
That's great. Well, Kirsten, let's turn back to music from the album, The Mad Mile. And you started to tell this story earlier, and then, of course, I interrupted you and had you change topic.
No, that was my fault.
But we're going to talk about Losing Something now is the name of the song, Losing Something. And there's a great message in it, and I know it came from a personal place, so I'll let you tell that story now.
Well, I started to talk about touring and how... Well, basically, as a musician nowadays, really the only way to make money is touring and the only way to make a living. But for someone like myself, I don't want to be gone from my family. So I'm having to find new, interesting ways to get out there. And so my new rules are basically if I'm not extremely happy about it or if it doesn't bring in money for my family, then I don't do it. So when it comes to losing something, it's just a commentary on what it's like to try to follow your dreams and some difficult dreams and what you give up in the process.
Let's share the song now and hear that great message and, of course, the great music from Kirsten Jones. This is Losing Something on In the Country.
I've learned that getting what you
Kirsten Jones and Losing Something. That is from her The Mad Mile CD. You can head to kirstenjones.com and find out more about her there and find the links to getting the CD and listening to some samples there as well. Kirsten, the process of songwriting, can you describe how you approach writing a song? Do you start with a title? Do you hear a melody? Is there a certain time of day? Probably different every time, but can you take us through a general approach?
Yeah, I tend to write lyrics first, just all over the place, just, you know, and I'll sit down with my guitar and just be strumming around, and I'll find a melody I like, and I'll go flipping through notebooks looking for something I want to sing about and trying to make that melody work. That's generally how it works for me, because I write a lot of really bad lyrics, but then out of every 10 of those, there's maybe a good one. So it's nice to have these notebooks full, and when you go back to something, you might think of it in a different way than you first wrote it anyway. So, yeah.
That's right. I'll be
flipping through notebooks. That's me.
Yeah, and again, you like you say, but you still have to write those 10, what you call bad lines, maybe not usable, to get to that good one. And if you were to try to filter yourself and think, okay, well, I'm only going to write it down if it's good, that might not lead, like those bad lines could lead to a good line.
Oh, I know, and I'm the worst culprit. Do you find that, Dave, like when you just self-edit before you can even get it down on the page sometimes?
It does happen sometimes, and you lose something that way, because if you write down something that maybe as it's coming out of your brain, as you're writing it, it doesn't look right, but who knows? Or if you're writing it down, keep it, because maybe something of it is useful, or maybe it's going to be the start of something else.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I'm kind of the worst self-editor there is, so I really have to get into a space where I can just let it go and just write. Usually, actually, watching other artists helps a lot. At concerts, okay, I generally get very inspired. If I have a notebook around, I'll just start scribbling things.
Yeah, I find that if I listen to other artists, it's certainly not taking their words or melody or anything, but there's something about listening to other songs can inspire you to create a totally different song.
Oh, absolutely. I'm most inspired when watching the artists that I love. And, yeah, it's never about using what they're saying, but it always inspires something completely different somehow.
Yeah, exactly. Music just sort of generates other music. Do you have you thought about pitching your songs to other artists, and do you think you've got some that are right for so-and-so, maybe one of your heroes?
Well, I would love to, Dave. I don't know. I'm absolutely wanting to do that. Going forward, that's going to be a bit of a focus for me. I'm going to go down to Nashville a little more often. But, yeah, I mean, I think I said on the last time we talked that there was a song I wanted Alison Krauss to record, and that's still true. I would love for her to hear some of this. Yeah, the field of people recording other people's songs is getting smaller and smaller, I find. So it's a lot of country artists and a lot of pop artists. So it just depends on if the right artist came along for one of my songs. I don't really know. I'd love to do it, though.
Yeah, definitely. And now, as far as duets go, on the album, of course, we talked about Jim Cuddy. Is there anybody else that, whether it's recording or just being up on stage, somebody you'd like to perform with, Alison Krauss or anybody like that?
Yeah, pretty much everybody I've named so far. But Sheryl Crow is really my next goal. You know, as crazy as that might sound, I thought Gary Loris sounded really crazy at one point. So I'd really like to work with Sheryl Crow. I think she's got a roots album in her for sure, and I think she'd be such a great roots producer, and I would like to work with her. So stay tuned.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't doubt it with the stuff you've accomplished so far with Gary and just asking. You never know. And on the subject of Gary Loris, of course, frontman for the legendary Jayhawks, because he was such a big part of this project, what did he bring out in you as a singer, or how did he approach it that sort of made this record what it is?
That's a good question, because he wanted me to sing like I sing. He didn't necessarily direct me in the singing very much. He taught me that an album will take as long as you give it. So if you have 2 weeks, it'll take 2 weeks. If you have 6 months, it will take 6 months to record it. So we did the bulk of this in 2 weeks while he was here, and we really, he helped us put the pedal to the metal. And I don't think it would be the album it was without Gary's direction. I'm just really glad that he was able to lead these great players. And, you know, we had a lot of the songs already pretty much arranged and everything. He didn't fool with things too much. These songs had been road tested for a few years before I ever got to this point, and he really seemed to like what he heard, which is really nice.
This past summer, back in July, you were doing a tour of Eastern Canada, got a chance to get out there and make some new fans and meet the fans that are already fans of yours. What was that tour like? Any interesting highlights from it?
Yeah, there's a really great place in a tiny small town called Alma, New Brunswick, which is right on the outskirts of the Bay of Fundy National Park. And they have this cute little venue there called the Octopus's Garden, and it was pretty much like giving a house concert. So about 40 people and just an amazing audience and such a beautiful little town, and that was definitely my favorite experience there.
It must be great when you're performing some of the songs in that kind of venue, or even a bigger one, but the smaller ones where you can tell stories. Maybe you're sharing a song for the first time, or they're hearing it for the first time anyway. What's that reaction like when you're sort of seeing them get into a song?
Well, that's why I like those intimate venues more. I love house concerts, and I love small places like that, because you can see people's reactions, and they can sing along with you, and you can interact in between songs. So, yeah, those are definitely my favorite ways to perform. I'm actually doing a lot of church as venues gigs now, as I really don't feel like I'm a strong bar performer. I don't do a lot of rowdy covers.
Right.
Really, it's been the best of both worlds, because I've got a wonderful, beautiful listening audience, a beautiful venue. I'm raising money for the churches. I'm coming home with money. And it's just about explaining that it's not a churchy show, but it's absolutely for all ages. And so that's starting to happen a little more, and I'm really enjoying that. So that might be a way forward for me.
Nice. Did you come from a musical family at all? I can't recall if I asked you last time, but cousins or parents, anybody else blazed this trail before you?
Not really. I mean, I think what we talked about last time was my mom was a... Yeah, like I grew up singing in the car with her just on road trips. We just sang a lot. Music was a big part of our lives, and she's a really good singer. And my dad is too, and he plays guitar. But as far as growing up with music in my household, there was nobody around, you know, playing stuff and teaching me anything. It was something that I just came to on my own for the most part, and feel like I was kind of just born with the desire to do, really.
Some people just are born with it. There's something there, and it starts at a young age, as it did with you. Do you recall the point when you realized that you could sing, and there was something there, maybe, you know, at a school performance or something, or even at home, but when you realized it, maybe people around you said, hey, you've got a good voice?
You know, I can't remember any moment. I was a very confident kid with my singing. I used to, you know, always gather up the neighborhood and make them come out and watch me. I can't believe I did that, but I did. And I don't know, I think
so. You knew
teenager...
right from the start, basically.
Oh, yeah,
right,
pretty much. Well, we lived in this great, my mom was going to the University of Virginia, and we lived in this great family housing where every single apartment was full of kids and parents. And so I would just knock on all the doors and ask them all to come out and watch me sing, basically. I have no idea why they agreed to do this, but it was very nice of them.
That's amazing. It definitely started back at that age, and going strong today with the album The Mad Mile, one of the songs winning third place in the International Songwriting Competition. And earlier this year, you were nominated for CCMA Roots Artist of the Year, which is a wonderful accomplishment. And again, our listeners can head to kirstenjones.com and learn a lot more about you and hear more of the songs. Thanks again, Kirsten. Been a real pleasure having you on and sharing the songs this time around that we did play.
Yeah, Dave, thank you so much. Anytime. I love doing interviews with you.
It's a real pleasure. Great stories, and I know that our audience enjoyed it. And we'll do this again definitely down the road. I know there's more music coming from you.
Yes, definitely. I'll keep you posted.
Awesome. My guest today has been Toronto singer-songwriter Kirsten Jones, and her current album that you can check out at iTunes is called The Mad Mile. I'm Dave Woods, and that'll wrap up this edition of In the Country.